We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. Let's begin our lesson, Becoming People of Our Time. Today, we're finishing up the specific focus within that lesson, Why Meditation Matters in a Crisis. This is the third part of that. If you missed any of the previous ones, again, you can listen online. I've been emphasizing that the problems we are facing are together kinds of problems. We can't get out of the situations that are causing most of our pain today without working together. We can't beat the virus if red and blue states don't work together. We can't solve racial inequity if white and black and brown people don't work together. We can't solve climate change if business and consumers, citizens and government don't work together. We are in a moment where, to solve our problems, we must work together. And on a weekend, when the calendar tells us to celebrate our homeland, it's a little bit challenging to be celebrating America. We've done anything but work together. We've all heard all about wear and wash and wait. We've all heard the call to work together to protect one another, but as has been the case a lot lately, instead, we've polarized. Instead, we've politicized. There have been times when we Americans did pull together and when we did do courageous and creative and sacrificial things together, but now, when our problems have grown more complex, now, when working together is even more necessary, we haven't been. Now, I don't think it's because we are any worse people than other generations were, no. I think we face circumstances that are more complex and create more friction and are more demanding of greater maturity than other generations have faced, which makes the bedrock spiritual principles that we talk about all the more important. It makes the application of spiritual wisdom and practices to help us live well in this more complex world, it makes them all the more important. A couple weeks ago, before both sides started agreeing that masks would be a good idea, a woman in our community was talking to me about the pressure she felt going to the grocery store. I get the argument, she said, don't spread the virus unknowingly and don't be held hostage to fear. Okay, I get it. And she said, I've got my own opinion. But that other people disagree with my opinion, that's not even what bugs me. What bugs me, I can't even go to the expletive grocery store and not get embroiled in one more political fight. The expletive grocery store. Well, if we're going to be people of our time, we're going to need to be a peculiar people, a set-apart people. By the way, those are Bible terms. I know how to use the Bible. Hyper-tribalism is the norm now. And we're going to be people of our time if we learn to be un-hyper-tribal. You know that things are out of balance when driving a car to get you from here to there somehow becomes a political statement. You could just like the extra mileage you get if you drive a Prius. You could just need an F-150 in order to carry a bunch of stuff. But no, these are tribe markers. You could just like yoga, or you could just like car racing. But no, those mark which tribe you belong to. The new norm in our society, everything gets politicized. Consequently, a whole bunch of different ways that we once thought about ourselves have gotten aggregated into a single way. Take the football kerfuffle that we've had the last few years. Football isn't an overtly political thing, but after Kaepernick took a knee, it certainly became political, like masks at the grocery store. Not a political thing, but now it sure is. People were no longer acting out of loyalty to their team. They were acting out of their loyalty to their political party. Now, I know the argument. I understand why. But I want you to notice that fewer and fewer things remain unpolarized. In a society, there are always differences. There are always different groups who have different self-interests. Groups of people that have personality types that all gravitate around this self-interest. Different interests of different genders, different races, different economic classes, different political parties, followers of different religions or no religion at all. But what is happening to us is that those many different categories of self-interest are concentrating into two categories. A Prius is not a liberal car. An F-150 is not a conservative truck, but they have become that. So does yoga, or lattes, or shopping at Trader Joe's, or wearing a mask, or watching football, let alone immigration, which isn't a conservative or a liberal issue, but it damn well is now. What we drive, increasingly the zip code that we live in, what we do for recreation, multiple different ways of being, multiple different ways of self-identifying, multiple different ways of having our interests are increasingly aggregated into one way that we identify ourselves, and that way has taken on a political label. We are on this team, and we are decidedly not on that one. And there is less and less stuff that is not under that label. Consequently, when anything threatens our singular identity, the threat feels much, much more powerful because it's a threat to much, much more stuff. Our preferred sport, our preferred grocery store, yoga or no, all markers of a political identity. And let that trend go on long enough, and pretty soon we stop listening to doctors to decide if we should wear, wash, and wait, and instead we listen to our tribal leaders, our political news pundits. They tell us what to believe about disease. Well, it turns out if we do that, this aggregating of our identities, it really matters. It matters if we identify ourselves lots of different ways or if we identify ourselves in this aggregated single way. The former helps us find common ground with lots of people. The latter, we only have common ground with our tribe. A couple of political scientists, Joshua Gubler and Joel Selway, they did a meta-study, more than 100 countries that are in conflict. It's not super surprising what they found. Civil war, on average, is 12 times less probable when a society is cross-cut by lots of different identities. Socioeconomic different identities, geographic different identities, regional different identifications, religious differences. But when many different self-identifiers get amalgamated into one great big meta-identity, any issue, no matter how small, no matter how silly, once it gets politicized, it carries all the power of every way we think about ourselves. And that is the national context in which you and I live. That is the national context in which you and I are being extended this historical invitation to change history. That's the context in which we seek to be spiritual people. Heal the world, people. These are the forces that weigh down on us when we fight about football or we fight about masks or we fight about any of these other markers. The fight carries the weight of a whole stack of personal identifiers. Sports can feel like a life or death struggle because we're not fighting about sports, just like we're not fighting about trade policy or tax rates or budget decisions, whether we should spend on military or education or healthcare. No, we are fighting to protect our identities, our very selves. We're fighting to assure that our team, our tribe wins. And that, given our evolutionary brains, that is a life or death fight. These meta-identities that we form, they're not even about politics. They're a high-stakes game that is fueled by the visceral and the emotional power that kicks in when our tribe's survival is threatened. And under that kind of pressure, we turn off the higher brain functions of our prefrontal cortexes, and we turn on our amygdala, our threat response brains, and we turn the game into do whatever it takes to make sure that the other tribe doesn't win. Make sure to do whatever it takes to make sure that the other tribe never gets the power with which they will threaten us. Do anything it takes to win. Sports, sure. Masks, sure. Whatever it takes, just make sure we beat the other team. And again, this is the context in which you and I are being extended this lifetime opportunity to build a new world, a new nation. This is the static that's in the lines. This is the friction in the system. This is the headwind that buffets us. And as if that wasn't enough, take all of that and on top of it, because we've chose politics to be the headline over these new meta-identities, now we allow ourselves and we allow one another to express all kinds of negative things, all kinds of hateful things about one another because we know the rules. We know that it is not okay to stoke hatred or to use hurtful language about racial identities or gender identities or even social grouping identities. But political identities, they are fair game. Republicans and Democrats, they chose to be Republicans or Democrats, so we can say whatever we want about them. We're allowed to hate them. And we do. In 1960, 5% of Republicans and 4% of Democrats said that they would be really upset if their child married across the party. 5% and 4%. In 2008, it was up to 27% and 20%. By 2010, 49% and 33%, because it has become okay to hate a political identity. And to help us with our hatred, our tribal leaders have all gotten their own cable channels now, and they reinforce that it is okay to hate the bad, bad people on the other side. They make it permissible to use words like idiot or liar or stupid. They show us actually how to malign one another's motives, how to say to one another that you are the bad people, that you are not loyal Americans, that you are deplorable. Our tribal leaders, they work up our darker angels, and they provide us with scripts so that we can all talk about the other side with shared language. Shared hateful language. And they teach us the spin. They teach us how to fake the news. They teach us how to spread deception. And if you don't recognize that pattern, I'll tell you, that's what has happened in Somalia or the Democratic Congo or Serbia or Croatia. Any place that balkanization has taken root, that's what happens. And that's our America. No wonder we can't work together on a pandemic. But it is the context in which you and I live. It's the same context that happens under the influence of wartime propaganda. We collectively get together so we can win the war and demonize the enemy. We collectively get together and we dehumanize the other. We paint caricatures of them so that they are less human than ourselves. I put a link in the live stream notes to an academic study. It's just the abstract, but down at the bottom of the link, at the bottom of that page, there's a link to several newspaper articles that explained the study. The title of the study was "The Parties in Our Head: Misperceptions About Party Composition and Their Consequences." Well, under the weight of that constant caricaturing that is fed to us by our tribal leaders, the parties that we perceive are quite different from the parties that exist. The survey asked us, how many Democrats do you think are black or atheist or agnostic or union members or gay or lesbian or bisexual? The survey asked us to estimate, how many Republicans do you think are evangelical or 65 or older or Southern or earn over $250,000 a year? Well, our tribal leaders have already told us the answer to those questions, so we know the answers. Democrats believe that 44% of Republicans earn over $250,000 a year. The number's actually 2%. Republicans believe that 38% of Democrats are gay, lesbian, or bisexual. That number is actually 6%. Democrats believe that 40% of Republicans are seniors. The number is actually 20%. Republicans believe that 46% of Democrats are black and 40% are union members. But no, the numbers are 24% and 11% are black. 11% belong to a union, 24% are black. And the more we follow politics, the more informed we are about our political life, the more wrong our estimates get. Our estimate correction rate is inversely proportional to how politically engaged we are. Here's the thing. Belonging is an essential part of being human. It's right there on Maslow's hierarchy. And boy, do we emphasize that here at Common Thread, don't we? We talk about it all the time, how community is essential to our health and to our well-being. We talk about how community is essential for our spirituality, about how our brains and our bodies and our sleep and our physical and our mental health are all tied to our networks of belonging. We are a tribal species, and belonging is in our DNA. Yes, that is true. But unfortunately, that same richness that accrues when we belong has a dark side. When our tribe, when the place that we belong feels threatened, we can be just as brutal as any other animal on the planet. In one context, belonging inspires us to be creative and loving, but in another, to be destructive and hostile and angry and hateful and unfair and mistrustful, blinded to our shared humanity. And contemplative practice and meditation. Contemplative practice helps us access the beauty of belonging, and it helps us shed the belligerence of tribalism. Contrary to some popular misconceptions, meditation isn't about warm and fuzzy feelings. It does eventually culminate in an enhanced capacity for love and compassion, but it doesn't start that way. It starts very cool and clinical. It starts as self-demanding. It starts by sitting us down and challenging us to observe our thoughts and to observe our feelings, to see them and to assess them in the cool light of day, to stand outside of them and look at them, and then to decide if we should or should not allow them to rule us. And as simple as that sounds, that is incredibly rare that human beings do that. We simply glom ourselves onto our thoughts and feelings, make ourselves our thoughts and feelings. We never stand outside of them and assess them. Consequently, meditation is a discipline that can make us less gullible to the propaganda that has now dominated the social discourse of our nation. Meditation can enable us to stand back from these aggregated identities and all the rage and all the loathing that and all the vengeance that they stir up inside of us. Meditation can help us stand back from the raw emotion that our tribal leaders keep selling us so that we will keep tuning in. By the way, it would not be a bad idea to quit tuning in. Meditation can help us see beyond our unseen biases, those ways that our brains go that we don't even see them yanking us this way or that. Meditation can help us see our own cognitive distortions, all the brain tricks that we've been talking about in all these lessons in the past. Meditation can help us not grind away when we hear their justifications for their biases and their fake news and their misleading information. Now, here's the thing. Meditation is not going to solve these very real problems we face. It won't solve racial inequity. Meditation won't solve a surging virus. Meditation won't solve climate change. That takes a critical mass of people, people just like us, working together, each doing our part in a pulling together, sustainable, here now, small, doable way that we can keep doing until the problem is solved. Solving these problems requires we work together. But what meditation does do is it disentangles us from the mess that is our hyperpolarized moment that keeps us from being able to work together. Meditation helps us become more discerning, to get past the blindness that this moment imposes on us. It helps us see more clearly, see past the propaganda machine that tells us the worst about the other. It helps us do better than our threat to brain, tribe brain, usually does. What meditation can do is enable us to work together on problems that will only be solved when we work together. Now, we can't be responsible to get all Americans to meditate. We can only be responsible for ourselves and for helping one another in our community. But fortunately, there are a whole lot of people all over our nation right now who are also working on meditation and helping their one another be faithful to the same. So I want to finish this part of the lesson with this encouragement. Be faithful to your meditation practice. Be faithful to your contemplative practice. If you don't have a practice yet, start small. I've put a link in the live stream notes to some previous lessons that I did about three core contemplative practices we do as a community: mindfulness meditation, the welcoming prayer, and the prayer of examine. They'll give you all the how-to that you'll need, but honestly, you get a pretty good primer on the how-tos just by showing up for our Sunday songs and meditations, so you can learn everything you need to know about how-to. So I want to end with a few practical points on not so much how to meditate or how to do the contemplative practices, but how to get yourself to actually do the practices. If you're starting small, it's often helpful, since habits are difficult to establish, to pin some small contemplative practice to an already existing habit. So, for example, you might set the habit that each time you load or unload the dishwasher, you practice the welcoming prayer. Every time you put the dishes in or take the dishes out, you breathe in and you breathe out, welcome. Every time you stack the dishes, welcome indwelling spirit. To recall whatever afflictive emotion has come to mind in the days around the loading or the unloading of the dishwasher. And in that moment, welcome. 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 Or you might pin mindfulness practice with making coffee. Give full attention to your breath from the time you start brewing until the moment when you begin drinking. Breathing in, breathing out. Paying attention to your body as you pour the water, as you put in the coffee. Paying attention, being fully mindful of your body, being fully mindful of your thoughts, being fully mindful of your emotions. Mindfulness and coffee. Or maybe add to your toothbrushing the first part of the practice of examine, remembering your days so they don't rush by unobserved. It's a good idea to tie some aspect of contemplative practice to your daily habits, to your daily driving, or your daily dressing, or your daily showering. Also, right now our community is kind of in the July downtime. We encourage one another to be resting during this time, to be slowing down. And I'm getting ready for our fall working the circle document. I'm talking to some of the team leaders right now so that when we get into late August and move into the fall, we'll be ready to help one another be faithful to our spiritual practices. And that will include, as it does every year, our contemplative practices. So I'm going to lead 6 contemplative Wednesday evenings starting sometime mid to late August, We'll review the core practices I mentioned a moment ago, and we'll do them together on Zoom. And then this is an important part. We'll get to know one another in breakout groups, getting to talk about how the practice went for us, what our challenges are, what are the difficulties, and in the process, create a network of spiritual friendships that support us in our spiritual practices. So it's kind of a twofer. You get stronger in contemplative practice, and we get to deepen our spiritual friendships. I hope you'll join me for those six Wednesdays. But it's July now, and in the meantime, between now and when we start, I would encourage you to not wait. I have started, I showed you that app that I used last week. I've got my son coming back a couple of days. I don't know what's going to happen. They're about to have a baby. And and then I do use the app that I showed you last week. By the way, I said last week that it was on iOS. It's not, but I found another one that's called Relax that does the same thing. It's on iOS. So I'm thinking do something to help us between now and August. And I scheduled a post to go up on our Facebook group. It should have gone up about 15 minutes ago. To ask if you know some better online way that we can support one another in being steady in our practice during July and into the early part of August. So here's what I have in mind. I have in mind a tick-the-box everyday Google document. So if you've got a better way, please respond to the post and tell me in a better way to do it. But other than that, I'll put up a document on Tuesday, and in it there will be a grid, and you put your name, and there will be a tick box for every day through to the end of the month, and you tick it if you've done your contemplative practice. Well, the idea came to my mind when Julie was telling me about how she and Sarah Joy lives in the UK, how they started a friendship. And it started as a Saturday morning check-in on their own mindfulness practice. They were reading a book together, and then they would get together and they would say, oh, I didn't do it this week, or oh, I did it this week. And along the way, they helped one another establish their mindfulness practice, but they also became friends. And I'm hoping that by using this shared document, as well as our directory, so you can contact one another outside of the box checking, I'm hoping that these will create that kind of a connection, the kind of connection Julie and Sarah Joy established over meditation, but also still enjoy till today. So that'll come up Tuesday. And I finish this part of the lesson with this. Be encouraged to be faithful to your contemplative practice. I hope you'll join into the spaces that we are creating to help one another do that. That's kind of an important part of spiritual community, to help one another be faithful to our practices. And indwelling divine, may we together access the wisest part of ourselves, especially in this time when all the social forces around us are marshaled to keep us from doing that. May we, by the practice of these spiritual disciplines, may we access the deeper, truer, realer part of us as we follow Jesus. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings, which has come to mean if you get to keep your job during this time, I hope that you will continue to support our community. I say all the time, this is a good place to invest your time and your energy and your love and the dollars that it takes for us to be healthy. You can do that by going to the donate button on our website, and there are four different ways that you can give. I'd encourage you to do that. And as you're doing that, what are you thinking about? What is stirring up in your heart? Okay, Gene, tell me what folks are saying.
So Rebecca, who's upstairs, says, I've been thinking about the relationship between building a sense of community mm-hmm. and othering everyone outside that group. Can we do one without the other?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know.
Well, and to follow up on that, Bob Love responded and said, Rebecca, think about family and then about good friends. Mm-hmm. Good friends are not family, but we're not othering them.
Yeah. But Rebecca's question is, can we do that? Are we able to do that, or will we do that? And I don't know, but I do know what's at stake if we don't. If we don't develop the skills that allow us to break down those cognitive dissonance barriers that we put up when we are under threat brain, if we don't transcend the propaganda-fueled mental processes that kick in so automatically that we inherited out there on the Serengeti that might be particularly relevant if you're facing a horde of marauding wildebeests, but are no longer relevant when we live in a globally connected world. If we don't transcend those old brain tricks and create concentric circles of belonging where we belong deeply with the people who support us, but we belong in even as we extend out from the intimacy levels to the place that where we belong as a whole. That's kind of what we practice when we do the loving kindness meditation. We start with those that are very intimate to us, and we develop that capacity there so that we can apply that same interior mechanism to people who move further and further out. Yes, everything in our brain and everything in our media right now is telling us that we hate the further we go out, but we have got to be a peculiar people, a different people, and learn how to apply love when it moves to the other, to listen to one another's stories, to find out what's going on in one another's lives. If we don't do it, we will miss this moment in history, and we could potentially destroy ourselves. Unrepented sin, unturned from sin, is a destructive, powerfully toxic force. So for all the cheering that we do for our tribe, that is going to screw us up. It is going to destroy our nation. We will not have an America to celebrate on 4th of July if we don't repent of our sin of racial inequity. So, Rebecca, I don't know if we will, but we damn well better. What else, Gene?
So, Angie, she says, I've been absent the last couple weeks, so I apologize if I'm getting caught up here.
Okay.
But I noticed on a recent post on our church Facebook page, we used the hashtag progressive church.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that signals a tribal identification, politically mm-hmm. liberal, and I'm struggling with how to reconcile that with today's sermon.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. I didn't know how we got that tag, except that here's how that might have happened. There was a website that approached us, run by a minister of another church here in town, who asked a few questions about the rethinking process we were going through about religion. And we were questioning the substitutionary theory of the atonement. And at that time, I guess that in his mind got categorized under what progressive church means. And at that time, it became a website that we became part of. And so people have found us by going to that website. And the meaning of progressive at that time was theological in nature. And now, when everything has a polarizing label, it may have stopped being a useful tag. So I don't know, Angie. I guess maybe you talk with the social media team about that. And by the way, social media team, let's talk about that. Should we be using the word progressive? Because it does say we are politically aligned over here. You don't do progressive, you know, and watch NASCAR. You don't do progressive and drive an F-150. That's one of the markers. So maybe we ought to not be using that marker. It's a good point. What else?
So I'm just here to tell you, do progressive and watch NASCAR. I will be watching NASCAR later. Just saying. That being said, Chris Thompson said, I saw a quote once that said, we are often not rational beings as much as rationalizing beings.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that quote, Chris, comes from a tremendous amount of brain science. We think that we are cool and rational and make our decisions on the basis of the facts. That's an interior story we tell ourselves because it feels like that's what we're doing. But the people who study our brains will tell us that in nanoseconds. Remember that book report lesson I did on the book The Righteous Mind by, I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Haight, H-A-I-G-H-T. David? No, David. Richard? I don't know. The Righteous Mind. He used the metaphor of the elephant that leans, and that our limbic brains of our deep old brains are like the elephant, and our prefrontal cortexes, our rational executive function brains, are like the rider. And we think we can direct the elephant, and to a certain degree we can, But when that elephant leans, yeah, there's not much we're going to do about it. And these visceral reactionary response, they happen in nanoseconds. We've already made a decision on the basis of either our tribal affiliations or on the basis of our fear responses or on the basis of something. We make these instantaneously. And then we create and stitch together. Our brains have this incredible capacity for storytelling. We create this story that we tell ourselves that gives rational purpose behind that. And so they've done studies on people who, back, it was this very cruel experiment where they cut people's hemispheres of their brains in half so they weren't connected, and one side of their brain would be doing a thing, and immediately the other side of the brain would stitch together a story to say why they were doing that, and it would happen seamlessly in seconds, in moments. Well, so what Chris is saying is the very reason for the spiritual journey. It's the very reason for the spiritual wisdom and practices, because our brains will go to that rationalization process immediately, instantaneously, unless we begin to train the elephant, and use the rider effectively. And the way that we do that, boy, the way we just talked about today, meditation. That's how we begin to rewire these automated, instinctive, reactionary responses that will kill us. We do it through the spiritual practices. That's why we talk about service work and systems work and spirituality work, because if we don't, our brains will go where they've always gone, do what they've always done in nanoseconds. All right. Well, we got one more minute. Is there another one or... Okay.
So Sue Kemple says racism, mm-hmm. our nation's original sin,
yeah.
is a grotesque manifestation of humanity's original sin, othering.
Yeah.
Belonging is the flip side of that.
Wonderful way to end today. Thank you, Sue. All right, if you would, put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we carry within us everything we need to get through this moment. We carry within us everything we need to build a bigger version of us. We carry everything that we need to begin to respond to the invitation of this historical moment. It is in us, the indwelling divine, love and joy and peace and patience, kindness, goodness, wisdom, discernment, courage. All the capacity that we need is in us. So if you would extend your other hand to our city, and let's remember as we go that we carry that, and let's give it to the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. Well, God bless you, and head on over to the Zoom chat. You can find the link and the password there on our Facebook group, and we'll see you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.